Hello, you are listening to Immigration Reform, the Past, the Present, and the Future, a podcast brought to you by the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. In this podcast, you will hear ILRC founder Bill Hing and Executive Director Eric Cohen talk about immigration reform. They discuss lessons learned from the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, also known as IRCA, in addition to policy efforts and the implementation process. They also discuss the current immigration reform bill and offer advice and tips to organizations on policy advocacy and immigration reform implementation. This discussion is moderated by ILRC Supervising Attorney Angie Young.
We're here to discuss the current immigration reform debate and lessons learned from the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. My name is Angie Young, and I'm an attorney with the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, and I'm here with Eric Cohen, our executive director, as well as Bill Hing, our founder and general counsel. Thank you for both participating. We know the ILRC was actively engaged in the policy debate regarding immigration reform in the early 1980s. And once IRCA, Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, was passed, the ILRC assumed a major role in providing training, technical assistance, and advocacy to practitioners and immigrants throughout the nation. And so we wanted to ask you, Bill and Eric, questions about IRCA, lessons learned, and briefly discuss the immigration reform proposal that is currently in the Senate. For those who are not familiar with IRCA, Bill, can you give us a brief introduction?
Sure. Thank you for the invitation. IRCA represented a balance between enforcement and legalization. You could say that that is similar to the proposals that are currently being debated. But the provisions were much more simple and straightforward. In IRCA, the big enforcement part was the introduction of employer sanctions. So for the first time in U.S. immigration history, after 1986, it became unlawful for an employer to knowingly hire an undocumented worker. That was balanced against legalization. Legalization had two parts to it. One was for people who had resided in the United States prior to January 1982, and the other was for special agricultural workers who had worked in agriculture for more than 90 days over a two-year period of time. So of those legalization provisions, a total of about 3 million individuals applied and received legalization.
IRCA had some provisions related to legalization and employer sanctions, as you mentioned, Bill. And seeing that the current proposal is also somewhat of a mix between allowing for a path to citizenship for certain undocumented immigrants, but also providing for increased border and interior enforcement, given what we learned from IRCA, how well does this model for immigration reform work, if it does at all? What do you think, Bill?
Well, my main problem with any enforcement part to immigration is that we've spent billions of dollars on enforcement, and what have we had to show for that? Really, all we've had to show is deaths at the border because of programs like Operation Gatekeeper and family separation because of programs such as recently Secure Communities, but also raids over during the George Bush administration. So throwing more money into enforcement does not accomplish what advocates for the right claim, which is that we will be able to keep out undocumented immigrants. And that just didn't happen as a result of enforcement money or employer sanctions.
And this is Eric. I agree with Bill. And the biggest way to solve the, quote, undocumented problem is to legalize them all. And this bill does make a first step towards that. The problem with the legalization part of the bill, or one of the problems, is a lot of people are going to be left out, both because of the eligibility date of December 31st, 2011, as well as the excessive fees and penalties. You add on to that all the ways that people think can be excluded from the bill. And what you're going to get is you're going to get some people who will benefit and some people who won't. And therefore, there will be another underclass of workers here in the country, possibly millions of them, who aren't going to qualify and are going to be undocumented, and employers are going to take advantage of them.
So So how different or similar are the reasons why immigration reform is needed now and why it was needed in 1986?
Well, this is Bill. We definitely need reform because there are huge backlogs in the legal immigration system, and we have an estimated 10 to 12 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. And there were millions of estimated undocumented immigrants back in 1986 as well, and backlogs back then as well. And so the reasons are similar. I think that there's more hatred today directed at immigrants. Maybe that's a real subjective view, but it just seems that because of mass media and Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and what's happened in different states around the country in terms of anti-immigration legislation, it seems that the mood of the country has taken a new low, at least in the last few years. Perhaps it's quieted down a little bit recently, but that all means that we're at a similar social and economic crossroads right now when it comes to immigration.
Can you give us a brief overview of how IRCA was implemented, for example, when regulations were issued, how outreach was conducted?
So the IRCA was a law that had to be implemented in a real hurry, especially the legalization part of it. The employer sanctions was phased in more slowly. But the legalization part was a really big lift. And INS had 6 months to issue the regulations. They were issued just several days before implementation. It was very, very hard, both for the INS and for those of us on the ground helping people apply, because we didn't really know what the rules were. Having said that, you know, the INS did do a pretty decent job by the end of the program as far as doing some decent outreach. They opened up offices in the community. In fact, one office was opened up across the street from our office, and the INS allowed a community advocate from the local Immigrant Rights Coalition to be housed right there at the legalization office. They also implemented other things, qualified designated entities, which allowed certain businesses and nonprofits to help function as a quasi-INS organization. So there were some positives, but it was such a short period of time that it had to get ramped up. There were some challenges, which is why we really need at least a year to ramp up this time and more than a year of an application period.
Another thing, this is Bill, another thing was that the community-based organizations really did a very good job of community outreach. Everything was tried, from comic books to PSAs to signs on buses, television announcements. So community-based organizations really did a lot. And one of the things that happened during that time was funders stepped up and funded many community-based organizations to do work and do outreach. But also Congress made it very clear in its language that the legalization was supposed to be implemented in a fair and liberal manner. So there was a message sent by many members of Congress to implement legalization in a fair and just and reasonable manner. And so there was some funding that was made available to community-based organizations, and I hope that Congress does a similar and maybe a bigger thing when it comes to funding of community organizations this time around. But there was some failures, perhaps, because we believe that many people did not apply that were eligible. And there are a number of reasons. There was confusion over what was required and what wasn't required. Many community-based organizations thought that large numbers of documents needed to be included. There were language problems. Their application fees were a hurdle in some circumstances. Maybe you have some other ideas, Eric, in terms of some of the challenges that IRCA had.
Yeah, I agree with all those challenges. Another big challenge was that at the time, there was a big mistrust of governmental agencies, and especially the INS. And there still is some mistrust among immigrants of the Department of Homeland Security. And so a lot of immigrants didn't end up applying because they really didn't trust that the INS would adjudicate their application in a fair way. And they also thought that the INS might end up deporting them, which is why it's so important and was so important that there's a confidentiality provision in this new bill, as there was in IRCA. And confidentiality meaning that the Department of Homeland Security should not be allowed to use any information in the application process for anything, any purpose other than to adjudicate the application. So they wouldn't be allowed to use any information for deportation or for an arrest, unless there's proven fraud, of course, in the application. That would be an exception, a reasonable exception to that.
So I want to get back to this concept that Bill mentioned about this interpretation of a liberal and generous fashion. And so during IRCA, there was legislative intent language from the House Judiciary Committee that the legalization program should be implemented in a liberal and generous fashion. And how important was this for IRCA's success? And is this standard something that should be replicated if immigration reform passes?
So this was really important because there were many instances when we would argue both during a legalization interview as well as in a cover letter on a legalization application, even during appeals, to the legalization appeals unit, about the fact that there's legislative history that the legalization program should be implemented in a liberal and generous fashion. So that was our leverage point to try to work on the adjudicators, the district directors, the leads of the legalization offices, and those adjudicating appeals. It was our leverage to show them, to talk to them through about how they should be more flexible in their approach and how they should be lean in more towards accepting proofs, affidavits, lean more into adjudicating the applications in a positive fashion, rather than having a more typical approach that some INS adjudicators have of our default is to deny everything, and you have to show us above and beyond the call of duty that you can qualify.
Yeah, I agree with that because one of the things that happened during IRCA was the INS had to increase its personnel, and they actually hired back to work some retired Border Patrol officers and adjudicators. And we were worried about that when that happened, especially when they hired back some former Border Patrol officers. But it turns out that across the country, generally, those folks were fair when they reviewed applications. In some parts of the country, not all, they allowed a community-based organization person to sit in the waiting room of the legalization office to actually greet and go over some of the information with people that were walking in. And so that message that Eric talked about was transferred at the local level. My fear is that that the current proposals may leave that message out. And the problem is that some of the proposed amendments, some of the right-wing media and anti-immigrant groups have engaged in so much vitriol attacking immigrants that the more positive message is being lost. And unless someone steps up, national leadership from both parties, to make sure that there's positive, inclusive language in the legislation and in the history of the legislation, my fear is that people will be afraid of coming in to apply.
So getting to that fear, I know Eric had mentioned the importance of a strong confidentiality provision in IRCA. Can you talk to us about why it is continues to be important to have these sort of protections in the current bill?
Well, as many people know, this administration has deported more people than any administration in the history of the country. They're deporting over 400,000 people a year. So this administration, Department of Homeland Security, is well known to be deportation hawks. And that's the rumor around the immigrant community that have been terrorized for years by this administration and the previous administration. And so now that they're coming out of the, being asked to come out of the shadows, they want to come out of the shadows. They want to apply for legalization, but they also want some security that they're not going to be part of that 400,000 people who are going to end up in deportation proceedings and separated from their U.S. citizen children for forever.
Yeah, in addition to that, in spite of DACA, some Dreamer parents continue to be deported. And so some people think that, the number of DACA applicants has tapered off in part because some folks are afraid that their parents might be deported. And before the DACA order was issued, there were Dreamers that were being deported. And before that, under the Morton memo of summer of 2011, many people thought that they fell under the deferred action language or prosecutorial discretion language in that memo, yet deportations continued as well. So I would repeat what Eric is saying, that without a very, very strong confidentiality protection, people have good reason to worry that a loved one or a friend or a neighbor who somehow might be associated with their application could face removal.
And the issue that springs to mind for me on this is if a lot of people are failing to apply for legalization, assuming something's passed, then it's not going to be a successful program. And if Congress is going to go through the trouble and Department of Homeland Security and all of us are going to go through the trouble to actually implement a program, we want it to be successful. We want everyone possible to apply and to qualify in order for it to be a success. So there's not an underclass of undocumented workers here. And so that everything in CIR that's passed is successful. And if you don't have a strong confidentiality provision, it's not going to be a successful program.
During IRCA, Congress also designated funds to organizations. How important was that for IRCA's success, and would a legalization program be successful if all USCIS's expenses had to come from fees and penalties? Do you still think people would apply for legalization no matter the cost?
Well, this is Bill. I do think that the vast majority of applicants will do their application on their own, but that still leaves a lot of people, perhaps millions, that need some kind of help. And it could be people in rural areas who have any number of problems with respect to documentation or information access, to just to the average person who has not been a pack rat and has not been able to keep all their documents or proof that they've lived in the United States for the amount of time that's necessary. And so people will need help. And USCIS will provide some help, of course, but because of the trust problem, individuals need to go to an organization at a location that they trust. And so agencies are going to be inundated, and those agencies need to staff up. And the only way to staff up is if there's funds available to those agencies. And so either private funders have to step up, or the government has to be generous in helping to fund some of the CBOs.
And during IRCA, there was some money, both those organizations that registered as qualified designated entities got $15 an application, which wasn't that much. But you add that to the fact that there was block grant money that was called a SLEAG program. There's block grant money given to states from the feds to help people with training and technical assistance and to help people, to help organizations get funding in order to help people qualify through the English and civics program, because that was one of the requirements as well.
So how do you both think, if at all, will the length of the path to citizenship impact immigrant integration in American society?
Well, the current proposal that people are talking about in S-744 has this minimum of 10 years that someone who gets the provisional visa would have to wait in order to get a green card. And those individuals will be delayed in terms of taking part, and I'm not talking about benefits, but just being welcome into the community. The big step for integration includes the provisional status, but becoming a lawful permanent resident and then ultimately a citizen is what's going to be necessary, because it's only when you have that assurance that you're here permanently that you feel confident in your ability to take part in school activities of your children, in terms of community activities, where you don't feel that someone's looking over your shoulder. And I think the temporary provision sends a bad message that you're not quite part of us yet, and that's not necessarily a welcoming message that needs to be sent in order to begin integrating people into our society.
This is Eric. I agree with everything Bill said. The one positive part of the 13 years is you only have, once you get that 10 years, you only have 3 years of being a lawful permanent resident until you can apply for citizen for naturalization. So that's positive. But the 10-year wait is just way too long. And it's really going to affect the way immigrants are integrated into American society. And that's part of the reason for this bill is integration.
So are there any lessons learned from IRCA about restricting eligibility for legalization to those that entered before a specific date, which for IRCA was several years before enactment?
Yeah, so this is Eric. I think a big problem with IRCA was the fact that the majority of the people who qualified under the pre-1982 provision. And IRCA was signed in November of 86, and the first time one could apply, submit an application, was May 5th of 1987. So that meant there was almost 5.5 years of people crossing the border in an unauthorized way. And those people, that 5.5 years of block of people, were not going to qualify for legalization under IRCA. Now, there were some people qualified under the SAW provision that Bill talked about earlier, but the vast majority were not going to qualify for any legal status. And what this meant was that the, quote, problem of the undocumented wasn't solved. We didn't legalize them all. And there remained millions of people who were here who were undocumented. And therefore, although the IRCA was very successful in helping to legalize almost 3 million people, there were also a couple million people who were left behind. And that just doesn't work.
Yeah, you know, the other problem is the fees. And the current fees that are being proposed amount to, through most calculations, first $500 penalty, and then another $500 penalty for renewal, and then a $1,000 penalty at the end, which could be $2,000, and just in penalties. We don't know what the application fee will be, but it'll probably be a few hundred dollars. And then that doesn't count any other fees that people may have to incur, including photographs, fingerprints, medical exams, probably. And that's just a real problem that Congress, in the current proposal, is making the program self-sufficient in terms of CIS having to collect all these fees in order to create the infrastructure to process legalization applications, rather than Congress actually simply appropriating money to do the right thing.
Are there any other lessons that you both can share with us that from IRCA that can inform our advocacy efforts in regards to the current immigration reform debate?
Well, one idea is it's really vital for organizations to build relationship with their local CIS, Citizenship and Immigration Service office. Because although we don't know exactly how this is going to be administered, at one point in time, there might be interviews. And it's really important to build a working relationship with those members of CIS so that when there are issues that come up, you can help resolve those issues in a really collaborative way with the CIS. The other issue that we think is really important is that organizations on the ground collaborate with one another. Like what's happening with naturalization throughout the country, we want to build collaborations in each major metropolitan area, even minor metropolitan areas, so that organizations are leveraging resources, sharing resources, working together rather than working opposed to each other, dividing and conquering so that the vast majority of people who are eligible can get help where it's needed.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is very quickly working with CIS to make sure that the regulations or the operating instructions that are going to be guiding the application reviewers be reasonable, and that service providers work with groups like the Immigrant Legal Resource Center to try to anticipate what problems there will be and trying to get the answers to those on paper very soon before the doors are open for applications, so that the fewer outstanding questions there will be, the better, if we can resolve some of the probable challenges and questions that people are going to have about applications.
So what are a few tips that the ILRC recommends other organizations begin to do to start planning for implementing immigration reform if it passes?
Well, there are several. One is try to obtain some funding, obviously. And that funding can be in the form of private foundations, community foundations, but it can also be in the form of governmental aid, government grants, local, statewide. Start lobbying your local and county officials and also your state officials to see if they have any money in their budgets that could be used for this process. Second of all is, as I talked about earlier, building collaborations among organizations as well as building collaboration with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. A third is group processing models. We have to figure out what's the most efficient and effective way to process the highest number of people who are eligible, who will become eligible for legalization. Group processing has worked in prior legalization bills, TPS, naturalization. What's going to work the best for your community? Third is make sure your organization and other organizations are well-trained. The ILRC is going to write a manual on legalization when it's finalized. We're going to conduct trainings, produce outreach materials. Make sure that your organization is well-trained so that you can really provide the highest end support as possible. And then last is try to get out in the community as much as possible, partner with immigrants in the community, immigrant leaders, immigrant organizations, immigrants themselves, so that you can help build really solid outreach efforts, ways as well as ways to partner with churches and with unions and other institutions that immigrants use and go to, and so that immigrants know what the requirements are so they can make well-reasoned decisions about whether or not to apply, and hopefully will make good decisions about going to the correct agencies, the good agencies that aren't committing fraud, because there will be a lot of organizations, a lot of individuals, a lot of providers who are going to be promising immigrant stuff, charging outrageous fees, and committing fraud. And we want to avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah, the outreach part I think is particularly interesting, because although in the year 2013 we're living in what we now consider a mass social media society, And we know that we can get messages out very quickly over the internet and through other means. The truth is they're still going to be part of the community that's not hooked into that. And so we have to figure out a way of reaching every part of the community that may be eligible, even those that may just take knocking on doors and going to churches and into the fields and to other places the old-fashioned way.
So this concludes our podcast. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Bill, for participating and sharing the lessons learned from IRCA and how they might apply today.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Immigration Reform, the Past, the Present, and the Future. For more information on immigration reform, please visit the ILRC website at www.ilrc.org. And under the Policy and Advocacy tab, click on Immigration Reform. The Immigrant Legal Resource Center, or ILRC, is a national nonprofit resource center that provides legal trainings, educational materials, and advocacy to advance immigrant rights. The mission of the ILRC is to work with and educate immigrants, community organizations, and the legal sector to continue to build a democratic society that values diversity and the rights of all people. This podcast was brought to you by the Immigrant Legal Resource Center.